The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 That's it? This is weird. You guys are behaving yourselves so well. This is so nice. All those complaints from people worked real well.
A lot of people have been very mad that GoFiber and I said Beyond back and forth. A lot of other people haven't been. But for the benefit of the doubt, the people who are mad, we're not going to do that this week. And if you disagree with those mad people, you can let us know.
Brian and I sat in a room together and just yelled it back and forth for 30 uninterrupted minutes.
Got it out of our systems.
Yeah, feeling good.
Good job, guys. Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 416. I'm Max Scoville. Joining me, Marty Sliva.
Hey, everybody.
Brian Altano. And Andrew Goldfarb.
Beyond.
What was our Goldfarb shower song?
Oh, man.
What did I miss? What conversation was
I? You were here. You're on the show. Yeah,
shower song?
Yeah.
What? Which shower song?
Sometimes when we take showers, we're thinking about Andrew Goldfarb. Yeah. Getting all soapy and lathery like a real handsome boy.
This is a podcast that's supposed to be about PlayStation.
That's right.
We're real bad about making it about PlayStation.
Not this week, though. We got a lot of stuff to
talk about PlayStation.
Yay, Paris.
It was the Paris Games Week Sony press conference that happened as of recording this morning, when you're hearing this, probably yesterday morning. Sony skipped out on Gamescom, and they normally have a press conference there. They kind of saved that up for this. We got a lot of real cool stuff to look at. What do we see?
Well, first off, we had a question about Paris.
That's right. The most important Parisian question there is from John Godiot in the Podcast Beyond Facebook group. He says, do you guys like croissants?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, like croissants a lot.
Oh, great.
Oh. Like a real flaky biscuit.
In Europe, getting breakfast, it often comes with a croissant.
Oh, has anyone actually said no to that question? I know there's people who are really against bread.
There was when I lived in New York, I ordered breakfast in this place sometimes that had a croissant that was filled with like cheese and bacon, a bunch of other stuff. But now bacon gives you cancer, so I can't eat that.
Everything gives you cancer.
Yeah, that's true. I was only kidding. I'm still eating a lot of bacon.
I worked at a coffee shop before I worked in video games. Shout out to Specialties Cafe and Bakery. I did not like working there.
Oh, you worked at a Specialties?
I worked at a Specialties. I hated it a lot.
They had really good cookies.
They had really good cookies.
Everyone keeps saying that. Why are they
really good ham and cheese croissants? Real good. Yeah, they put a lot of butter in there.
So there was a PlayStation press conference this morning.
You put the croissants question on.
I figured it'd be like a yes or no, not also, when I was
you
a young boy.
Asks in
my
the middle.
Mother came across the world.
I was confused because he put asks
teleboat.
In the middle. You didn't write his first and last name and then asked.
John, just shut up.
Okay.
Just shut
you're
the
all idiots. Anyway.
We're going to talk about a bunch of stuff this episode. We're going to talk about Wild. We're going to talk about Detroit. We're going to talk about Gravity Rush. We're going to talk about No Man's Sky, Dreams. Let's start with Wild.
Yeah, Wild is probably the thing I walked away from that being most excited about. I'm going to be honest. I completely forgot that was the thing that got shown at Gamescom.
Well, I think everybody did because that was last year's Gamescom.
That was Gamescom 2014. And it was – like Gamescom isn't a big announcing type of show. They don't – you do a lot of
– That year, I was at that, like physically at that conference, and I remember it being pretty big. That was the PT conference, and I think Wild closed it out. Mm-hmm.
That was when the Tomb Raider stuff happened with Microsoft. That Gamescom in particular actually was a big show.
Yeah, so this was Michel Ancel's sort of from that opening trailer.
I'm a dumb boy around this. I was staring at this, and I'm like, I got GDC and Gamescom mixed up there.
Oh, that's fine.
Because it's like 3 in the afternoon and my brain started to leak out through my ears.
Oh, no.
That doesn't sound healthy.
Luckily, we wrote words on the sheet of paper. Michel Ancel.
Yeah, he started. That's the creator of Rayman and Beyond Good and Evil.
Beyond.
Good and Evil. And he is, in theory, still at Ubisoft, but has formed a side studio called Wild Sheep Studio, and their debut game is going to be Wild.
And it's really interesting because I think a lot of people hear, oh, Michel Ancel's a new side project game. That's cute. And they expect to be like a 2D platformer or something. And then it's this like incredible open world caveman animal game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's really interesting. Like, Ubisoft is a cool company in that, I wrote a thing a few years ago, actually, in that they tend to give people a pretty long rope. As far as Patrick Plourde got to stay within the company, he directed Far Cry 3, Assassin's Creed 2, but then he made Child of Light, which is the kind of game that traditionally you would leave a AAA dev to go make on your own, but they let him make it within Ubisoft, and now he runs a division called Funhouse. It's for a lot of cool side projects like this.
That's part of the cool hip Ubisoft we've been seeing the last few years, where they're just like, we're really in a weird artsy stuff.
And that's why it's weird.
Fun platformers.
Patrice Desilets, who created Assassin's Creed, left because he felt kind of restricted. And he is also making a caveman game outside of Ubisoft. It's this really interesting thing where
Ubisoft is also making a caveman game.
Because they're making
inside
Primal.
Of
yeah, so they announced Far Cry Primal. And it's like, if I'm at Ubisoft and I'm like, this dude, Michel Ancel, announced a game called Beyond Good and Evil 2, like, 5 years ago now that we've never seen anything from other than that cinematic, and he's making a game that feels like it would directly compete with Far Cry Primal. It's really interesting. It's really interesting they allow that to happen, and it's not even a Ubisoft title, despite him being a Ubisoft employee.
Yeah.
Very strange. The circumstances there are really interesting.
But the footage we saw, I thought mechanically was really interesting in terms of the, it seems like the main mechanic is sort of you're this like old shaman in back in the old days, with snake witches and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you can possess the animals in the environment. And it's sort of like Space Station Silicon Valley slash Geist, mm-hmm. where you're jumping around as a ghost.
Before we have the print and error in next week's Beyond, I want to point out that none of that actually could ever happen in real life in history.
I mean, no one lived. We weren't living in olden times.
It's pretty safe to assume you couldn't summon a snake woman.
I think that everybody was suffering from a pretty low-grade lead poisoning and malnutrition. So giant naked snake ladies were a pretty common occurrence.
That's true.
Naked snake?
I do
my favorite of the snakes.
I like
Metal Gear.
I like they said you could put any animal on that thing. Like you could put a big bear monster.
Yeah, so we saw in that demo, he took possession of an eagle who was flying in the sky, and then he sort of looked down and saw a snake that he got in his mouth.
Yep.
You got to ride a bear at one point.
He became a bunny.
He became a bunny rabbit.
That's really cool.
Stealthily running around a group of cannibals.
It reminded me of Dishonored a little bit, where you do like the rat possession.
See, that's the thing is, man, that was a cool feature in Dishonored amidst other stuff where you're like stabbing and shooting people and jumping around. Like, I really, really like animals in games.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Because I'm a human being every day, you know? Like, it's kind of cool to get to be different animals. And I've been wanting a game where you play as animals for a while now.
Yeah. And it also seems cool if all of these objectives are like mini sandboxes where it's like, hey, this group of cannibals are about to eat this person.
Yep.
So use any one of these 10 animals to figure out what to do. So you became like a flock of ravens.
Yeah, I mean, we all gloat about how much we loved Metal Gear Solid 5 on the show. And I think a bunch of us said the one thing that we really would have liked was sort more to like kind of animal mounts and summons that you could bring a bear in and mm-hmm. have him kill a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. You ride a bear.
And now you can.
That's
and
what
you can
I
ride
about,
them in water too, which is great.
Yeah, and there's big fish and stuff. I mean, I loved Shadow of Mordor because you ride a dog.
Yeah,
you just train a dog and make it ride up the side of a building. That's pretty
and everybody's
exciting.
Everybody's like, "Whoa, dog over there!"
And then you're like, "Oh no, it's butt bags or something."
And then you get
butt
to the top of
the dog snatcher.
Yeah,
you go up three steps, and they'd be like, "Oh, that's really high up there. I can't climb it. Give me that animation."
Shoot a magic bow and arrow at some bees, and they explode. And they're like, "Whoa, crikey!" And then more dogs come in.
I haven't announced this yet. I'm going to replace Nolan North in the sequel of that game because he did every voice in that game.
Wow.
Except for the Troy Baker voice.
Congrats, man.
You're a weird boy. I really like that.
Scottish dogs.
I really like how the game sort of has a cartoony look to it. It's not like photorealism.
Yeah,
it's not like Horizon.
I'm immediately more interested. Like, I'm not really on board with the whole caveman thing. I think that, Horizon looks crazy, crazy cool, but it also has this kind of like, it's still trying to be badass.
Oh, yeah, and it is futuristic.
Yeah, and Far Cry Primal is still sort of like, this is realistic, gritty caveman
stuff. It's actually, they're technically as far apart as you could be because the caveman thing, like Horizon, the idea is that the Earth has like been reclaimed. So mm-hmm. it's like all of our technology is like their past, basically. Mm-hmm. And so these weird like techno robot things are actually like super old to them.
Yeah, and they're basically rebooting humanity. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was interesting that like they also showed a Horizon demo at the conference, which we're not going to talk about too much just because that was actually the thing Andrew and I saw behind closed doors at E3 and we talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like, I don't know, I'm a lot of this reminded me a little bit of, I don't, do you remember Mark of the Kree for PS2?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it reminded me of that a little bit, where it sort of felt like this could be like a Disney animated thing, you know, mm-hmm. like a more mature Disney animated thing.
Well, it feels like Fable. Like,
yeah,
Fable totally. Has that kind of like, there's going to be mature themes in here, but it's also, it's, I guess it's kind of French, you mm-hmm. know, it's sort of like this mix of cartoony stuff, but with some adult theme thrown in there. It's, yeah. it's very whimsical.
And I'm like, I'm just super curious to see what this game looks like if it ever actually comes. Like, I mean, like they say 2016, but like, I'm really curious to see like what the timing on this is and what it means for Michel Ancel. Mm-hmm. Like, if this does really well, like, does that studio become a bigger thing for him? I don't know. It's really interesting landscape wise, but yeah, the game itself looks awesome.
How have they been developing that in a spin-off indie studio? Like, where did that money come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Do they have a publisher? Like, what, I mean, like, I
imagine
what is
a,
that?
I imagine a guy like Michel Ancel can get venture capital pretty easily.
Yeah. Probably.
And, yeah. I, and it seems like
it's
if
a
it's
PS4
been on
exclusive.
Yeah, so it's, I'm sure Sony's been giving it money.
It's also like, it doesn't seem like the most technically advanced game ever made.
Yeah.
I mean, when you pull the camera out a little bit and there's the eagle holding the snake and you get a good view of that landscape mountain underneath you, like, it's not jaw-dropping. I think the scope of the game comes in the interaction with the, you know, fauna and,
yeah.
characters and stuff like that.
And he said on stage that this is not, like, there were not predetermined sort of cinematic moments, that this is a system and mechanics driven game, which
right.
I feel like you can do on a smaller budget. Then.
Dude, if it's Scribblenauts meets Far Cry, I'm on board.
God. God.
Yes.
Yeah, what a good description.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, the caveman era works really well for it too. Like, that setting, because like, yeah. it does make sense that they would be kind of more in touch with nature than like we are.
So if you go back, and if you don't remember, watch the Gamescom 2014 reveal trailer, because there's a lot more fantastical elements. There was this, like, they were swimming underwater and there was this giant, like, almost like seated skeleton king god under the water. There were like mud men. You had this real cool puppy who was crawling on your head.
The mud men
down.
Is oh, a right, real bad
right.
boys.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a 4-player co-op game in that original reveal.
I wonder how different it is. Yeah, I mean, wonder if that's still stuff that's in it, or if this
it's been almost a year and a half.
It feels like we saw like a very hyper-focused section of the game today. Yeah. Rather, I'm hoping it's that rather than they cut out all the stuff we saw the first
time. Well, and that one was very much more of a trailer, whereas this is just a demo of like a, you know, a slice of the game. So,
which is cool.
I'm super, like, that's one of those, pretty much everything in this conference is a game where I'm very interested to see what it becomes. I think there's a lot of stuff here. There wasn't any clear, like, gigantic, like, oh, that was like the biggest wow moment of the whole show. Because I think it was a lot of like, I mean, we'll get to all those in a second. Like, a lot of these kind of
Kanye.
Unproven games. A lot
Kanye.
Of Kanye, all these Kanye games. Really an Avicii game.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I've been doing this long enough that I'm good at kind of recognizing, like, here's a game that looks cool right now.
Yeah.
And here's a game that, hopefully continues
cool.
looking this cool because I think it looks really, really cool. This is definitely the kind of game. Like, when I first saw the Witcher 3 demoed, like, I went home and bought the first Witcher book and immediately started replaying Witcher 2 that I never really got into because it didn't quite grab me.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was just, this has that kind of vibe to it. Luckily, I don't have to read anything. I'm just going to play it when it comes out.
Yeah, I think there's less of those big sort of conference wow moments nowadays, now that we're a few years into this generation and people are sort of settling into what these consoles are capable of and basically getting to see, here's 10 minutes of what a game looks like when you're actually playing it, which is kind of disappointing when you see games that are pre-rendered trailers, because you're like, everybody else is kind of showing off how this thing works, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I liked Wild. They were like, here's 5 minutes in this game. Here's what it looks like on average. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on, we also got to look at some David Cage stuff.
Yeah, that's sort of the opposite end of what we were just talking about.
Yeah, very much. Very different. As opposed to open-ended, this looks much more story-driven. We saw that Takara demo back, I think that was a GDC joint.
So
back
that
in, like,
was
2012, maybe?
That is incredibly a PS3 tech demo. That was before the PS4 stuff. And I'm really happy they went back to it because they had been showing off a demo called The Dark Sorcerer, which was that like old man face that could do a bunch of weird crap.
Oh, yeah.
And they showed
really
it twice.
Like,
and the first time they showed it off, it was a very straight played dark fantasy thing, and the second time
they pulled back,
broke the fourth wall, and he was like an actor.
Exactly.
Stage.
And like, I'm very happy that's not the one they fleshed out, because this one, the Kara tech demo, was so cool. Like,
well,
I loved that demo at the time.
It's entirely possible that's the thing they're working on kind of concurrently, that they're still working on that.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think this one, like, as a game though, like, I like that world, I like that story. If you haven't seen the original video, like, definitely go back and watch it, because that video is great. I think it's like really smart and well played, and I like that actress. So I hope this game lives up to that. I actually liked Heavy Rain. Beyond Two Souls I didn't get into.
I'm dying to replay those. Like, I've kind of tried to get into Heavy Rain a bunch of times. I'm always really impressed by it because it's such an incredible, like, attempt to do something, but it's sort of misses the mark in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what happens, and it's like,
That's always sort of my experience with the three Quantic Dream games, Indigo Prophecy, or I guess Fahrenheit or whatever, Heavy Rain, and Beyond Two Souls is A for effort, C for execution.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought its reach extended a little bit further than their grasp, at least in terms of they try to do really important and meaningful things with storytelling, and I don't know, like, personally, the writing hasn't been there for me.
Mm-hmm. No, the writing is definitely an issue. I thought that the voice acting in Heavy Rain's kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. Some of it is really, really good.
Play it subtitled. Yeah. Play it in French with subtitles.
Yeah.
Like, that's seriously, like, that's the way it was shown to me at first. And I was like, this is really awesome. And then I played it with the dub, and I was like, oh boy. Oh, yeah.
That's
boy.
Just like, it's a weird thing to do that for a game that takes place in America.
Yeah.
Although the kids are French. I think they're David Cage's kids.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that did the voice acting for the children in that game.
Interesting.
That's why they have completely different accents.
Mo-capped his own son and chased him in the street.
and the story, I mean, tragedy. I don't want to spoil anything because obviously people are going to play this for the first time, but the story is kind of strange. And it's got a ton of holes in it once you kind of figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I still appreciate it for what it is, you know?
Yeah, those are at Paris Games Week. Those are at Paris Games Week, playable on PS4. They still haven't said the date for when they're coming.
Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls are.
Yes, exactly.
Neither were in this conference at all today, which I find kind of interesting.
No, which is weird because they keep saying they're going to announce those dates soon and they're at the show, so I was surprised. But I am glad we got this game, which is called... It's weird. It's called Detroit, but yeah, it's called Detroit.
Become Human.
Become Human.
Yeah,
and it does. It follows those kind of androids are manufactured and purchased by people as essentially slaves, as like the working, like the service industry is made up entirely of androids.
Yeah, like the trains in Detroit had like android only sections.
Yes,
where you can't sit with other people. I mean, it seems like it's really smart, topical themes. Again, I'm wondering how it'll be handled.
Mm-hmm. His stuff does really well as a trailer. Like, I thought the first Beyond Two Souls trailer was incredible, too.
Yeah.
I think that I'll be very curious to see if he can kind of step back and do a more grounded, less pretentious story, because I think, like, it's, like, this weird thing where there are so many threads that are, like, mm-hmm. so, like, high-minded and trying to be deep that sometimes he seems to get away from himself.
I mean, I think that he and Kojima should collaborate. I think it'd be real weird. But I like the moment-to-moment stuff in those games, like, when you pull back and you realize that, like, Heavy Rain is the only game I've played where you are a cool detective changing a diaper.
Yeah.
And if you're really bad at changing the diaper, then he's like, oh, darn it, you messed up the poop again, and you have to try again.
No, I love that they got John Wayne to be in the game, too. That was incredible.
There's more cripes. Poop inside of the bag on his butt again. He filled it up with old turds.
The damn thing's screaming and making bad smells all over.
And again, this is early on, but there's this, Heavy Rain centers around a father that loses his son, and then having another son that gets kidnapped and trying to find the kidnapper. But there's a moment where the very early on in the game where the father is sort of playing, you know, weekend dad to his son, and you can play out the scene any number of ways, which I always thought was fascinating. And he's sitting there watching TV, and you're in this very terrible looking living room, just miserable inside, and you can basically get your kid a snack, you can make him a sandwich, you can let him watch TV, or you can be a total ass and be like, shut off the TV, you're not doing your homework, you're going right to bed at 7:30. And he's like, I hate you, dad. And the way that scene plays out differently and his relationship with you depends on how much sort of give and take there is between the father and son right there. And that kind of stuff is way more fascinating to me than pretty much anything else that they could be doing with this new game. I know eventually they'll probably announce voice actors for it if they go the Beyond Two Souls route of, you know, they had Willem Dafoe and Ellen Page, like big name people.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me. That's pretty cool. That sort of rectifies the issue I had with bad voice acting in the first game. But to me, that moment-to-moment of sort of like how long did you let the scene play out versus how long Andrew did it or whatever, and how that affects your character interactions later.
I like
the
game.
That's the most fascinating
stuff. I like messing with the sort of like where you have to reach for a doorknob.
Yeah.
And I like doing that. Is he going to grab it? No, he's not going to grab it.
I did the thing.
I spent like 5 minutes just holding a can of soda, just moving it back and forth, like really high in 7-Eleven.
Pouring orange juice all over my face and just put it down, and they just shook it and was like, ah.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife's in the other room yelling at me in the game and in real life.
It is interesting that Indigo Prophecy and Heavy Rain, I think they were really impressive. But since then, we've had a lot of games that sort of do things like this, from Telltale's games to Life is Strange to even like Gone Home and now Until Dawn. And so I feel like that marketplace is a bit more fleshed out now.
I think that it's
which I'm super happy with.
Yeah, I think that is the execution of Quantic Dream games. Maybe not always great, but the ideas are way ahead of their time, and we're finally at a point where people are like, you know, I want a story. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I mean, I still need to play Beyond Two Souls. It's so hard to say the title that was because of the podcast we're on. But I love that you're just like Ellen Page with a spooky ghost pal, and you're like messing up stuff.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah, like, the stuff I played of it, and I watched a lot of your stuff with Greg at the time.
Yeah, the birthday party scene is awesome.
And that's the thing. Like, the problems I have with that game, what I played of it, were more the weird nonlinear story stuff and like the. It's really hard to stay with that character because it jumps around a lot.
Yeah, one day you're at a birthday party lighting tables on fire, and the next day, or the next scene, you're like at a dinner party, and you're
you're homeless, or you're on a Navajo Indian reservation,
or you're escorting a kid through like a gunfight in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that sucks.
So weird.
Yeah, like, I realize it's a video game, but like I'm there's so many games where you can be in a gunfight in Afghanistan. Like, I'm totally okay playing one where you're just like going through coming of age stuff. Like,
and that's the thing. That's when they announced that game. I wanted that. I wanted like the Willem Dafoe therapy scenes and the birthday party scenes. Like, I want to see like why this girl's all up because she's a ghost buddy. Like,
It's this stuff I always liked about the X-Men movies the most. You know,
yeah,
like the X-Men movies that sort of just like, hey, my dad hates me because I have ice powers. Like, stuff like that is really interesting to me.
No, the part where Pyro puts on NSYNC in the car by accident, Wolverine's all mad at him.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that stuff. I've always liked the moment-to-moment stuff, like, where it's like, here's something familiar but kind of made fantastic.
And the reason I think Quantic Dream will have a slight advantage over, you know, what Marty inferred about all of the Telltale games is that when this game comes out, you'll get to play it all. It won't be like month. I'm assuming it won't be month to month episodic or every 3 months episodic. So, yeah, really cool stuff.
Another game we got to look at is Gravity Rush 2, which is real pretty and nice.
It's so pretty. I'm like really excited for that world again. Like, I really, really like the Vita game. And I think that, like, I'm excited for the PS4 remastered, the Vita game too, actually. Yeah, like, I would still rather replay it on Vita probably, but like, I think it looks so much prettier on PS4.
Playing a game like that on Vita feels like trying to look out the window of a plane to see a beautiful city. You know, you're like, it's too small. You're like, oh, I want to look around. And I'm really excited to play a gorgeous game like that on a big TV.
Right. Yeah, completely agree.
And they are able to do more cool stuff with it. Like, because the Vita is, you know, technically limited as opposed to PS4, like, they announced today all these really smart new forms of gravity. So it's like, you can either like be lighter and that means you're like faster and move around. Or if you're like using like the Jupiter gravity, you're like much like heavier and you're stronger as a result, but you move slower. Like, I think all that stuff is really smart. Like, the manipulating the physics to actually make the game mechanics change is such a cool idea. And that's so unique. Like, yeah, there's no other open world game that really does that.
Yeah. And it seems like they're taking, like, if these systems are deep enough, it could be a really interesting third person action game.
Yeah.
And it seems stuff like AI companions were super cool. I like that. There's kitties everywhere.
Yeah. I like you can mess up a whole farmer's market. I hate those things. Yeah. I want to go in there with magic and just destroy those watermelons.
You can do that in Uncharted 4, too. That demo
reminded me a lot of Uncharted 4 in the sense that it's sort of like, here is a very kind of rustic, grounded environment that we are demonstrating the power of our engine. Like, let's mess it up and show you exactly how many pieces.
Remember, like, the first time we saw Revengeance or that whatever the Revengeance tech demo was? It's like, we're going to show you our sword system by cutting up a watermelon.
Oh, that was great. It was like Fruit Ninja evolved, basically.
It's still one of my favorite tech demos.
Just cutting up a watermelon. Like,
watch us do different slices.
Well, they did the same thing with Metal Gear Solid 2. It was like, let's shoot this melon. Let's shoot this ice bucket. And it's like, I think that there's something to be said for showing off. It's the same way in like art class they make you do a still life of like, hey, here's some fruit and a gourd. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this is boring. I want to draw a wizard. But they're like, no. Understand this familiar thing. See if you can recreate that. And I think that's why.
And then your wizard will be awesome.
Yeah, your wizard will be holding a huge gourd. Yeah, it's a scary gourd.
Yeah, I honestly didn't think we would get a sequel to this game ever. So
They teased it. So they teased it at TGS 2013, I think it was. And everyone was obviously assuming it was going to be a Vita game, and it seems like since then they probably were like, nope, and made it a PS4 game.
That's a bummer.
I think just one last thing, they showed boss battles again. And the boss battles in Gravity Rush, where I know Greg's big problem with it, and a lot of people, because the targeting system was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. So you would like literally lock on and then just shoot straight past the boss and run to a wall beyond it or whatever.
Yeah. Beyond.
Yeah. I think hopefully now that system has been a little tweaked. I didn't really have that much trouble with it, but I know a lot of people complained about it.
It didn't feel precise. It was definitely not a game where you felt like you were fully in control, which kind of fit because you're controlling gravity. You're basically just... you're falling with style.
Yeah.
That was a box quote.
Yeah.
Falling with style.
It's a Toy Story quote.
Yeah. So, from the movie Buzz Lightyear is back.
So speaking of Vita, you want to jump forward real quick to that one little note that we had about Vita?
Yes, we absolutely can. So there's a thing. Well, there are two interesting things this week. The one that I just found funny. During that conference, they very quietly put up a post on the PlayStation blog announcing a new Vita game, which is like, kind of sad because it's like it doesn't, you know, a Vita game's just not going to get a mention during conference.
That was
like
our
anymore.
Thing. Now, it was a 90-minute conference that the word Vita wasn't mentioned.
Yep, and it's like the third one in a row where that was basically the case. Yeah, there was just a quick rhythm game. The guys who made DJ Max Fever on PSP announced this, like, it's called Super Beat Zonic. And it's just a fairly straightforward rhythm game. Looks fun, interesting if you're into that. But it was just weird because it's very small, and that's kind of what the Vita has been relegated to. And there was quotes going around earlier this week, and this is kind of old. Like, obviously, this stuff has been said many times, but it was kind of the most direct and definitive way of saying it, that there are absolutely no first-party studios working on Vita games right now.
Yeah.
And I'd, like, Shuhei said that to me at E3. He said that to many other people many times, that there aren't big Vita games in the way. But, like, to really just put the nail in that coffin is kind of sad. It I think that system still has plenty of great indie stuff coming to it, like Volume and, you know, all kinds of other cool indie games. And then obviously Remote Play, like they showed off Fallout 4 running on it fairly recently. I think there's still utilities for that system, but it's just interesting that it's not really part of Sony's ecosystem anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I've always had that problem with video game systems in general, is that they don't really get that, like, last day at work party where everyone goes out for drinks and you get a cake with your name on it. Like, it just kind of they just kind of fade out.
Yeah.
Like their release cycles trickle out until there's less and less there, and all of a sudden the system just doesn't really. It's just not part of your conversation.
It's like leaving popcorn on the stove. It's going to go pop 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 pop, and then eventually there's going to be like 2 minutes will pass and be like pop.
Yeah.
And the bottom's totally burned and scorched. Yeah. But
that's
there was that one.
That's
last,
exactly what the Vita feels like.
They had new Wii games at E3 this year.
Yeah.
We're probably going to keep getting bits and pieces of Vita games. There's probably going to be Japanese games import.
It discourages third parties too, though, right? Like, it's like that. It's a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point, because, like, if Sony's not even supporting this thing, like, why would they put another Assassin's Creed on it? Or why would they?
Yeah, it's a bummer.
It's funny. I'm thinking now of I can actually remember a lot of the last games I played on the console. Like, going back to
the Swan Songs.
Yeah. I remember playing Mario RPG like 3 months before N64 came out.
Yep.
I remember playing Chrono Cross like. Maybe the fall of PS2.
Yeah,
I remember
God
like
of
God of War 2 and Okami and Final Fantasy 12 were super late.
I remember Rare put out that Conker's Bad Fur Day, basically like a day before the N64.
Yeah, I mean, The Last of Us was, what, 6 months before the new generation of consoles?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Very, very late in the cycle. But it was weird. Like, PS3 was still very popular at the time.
Oh, yeah, totally. And there's still PS3 games are coming out, but it's like, I'm
But in terms
never
of like first party games,
again.
Like, yeah, well, that's not happening.
You get that stuff where like the PS2 was discontinued, like, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah. But they're still like selling decently in Brazil 5-6-7 years later.
Yep. Yeah, it's because the lifespan of a good video game platform is going to stick around for a minute.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I was thinking about getting a PS2 for my desk of the day, and I was like,
yeah,
maybe I could spend money on other things, but you know.
Yeah, and Fran sent out that weird email looking for N64s around the office.
That was a really weird email. Old Fran Cube. I hope that we get some weird little indie stuff on Vita. I hope that there are people who take advantage of that. Like,
yeah, they're still coming. I mean, there's still like little indie games coming.
I remember hearing that like Unity was compatible or like was portable to Vita. And if that's the case, then that's going to be like, you know, there's going to be people
open
like
the floodgates for PC stuff.
Well, that's why I'm always surprised. And maybe it was like two ships passing in the night, but that it didn't get more iOS ports.
Mm-hmm.
Or Android ports of games that you could actually play with buttons. And
but
controls.
I mean, like at the same time, like LEGO Marvel Avengers is coming to Vita, and it's the first ever open world one. Because like the LEGO games have been open world for a while now. I think LEGO Batman 2 might have been the first one. But the Vita versions were still just kind of the typical hub world LEGO games. But like if LEGO Marvel Avengers is like the last big game to come to Vita, but it's an open world Avengers game, I'm super on.
Yeah, it's
super
a nice, it's like, a nice way to close
great.
That book.
Yeah, so it's like, and actually I talk about it all the time, but Need for Speed, I think it was Most Wanted, is on Vita, and it's like really good. It's like not graphically as impressive as PS4 version, but it's like
pretty
looks good, and like
good.
You can drive around that full open world, and I know I almost got the platinum in that. I'm like two trophies away. I don't know, like I think games work well enough. Liberation honestly was pretty good on Vita. I don't think it was super wonderful, but I probably liked it as much as I liked AC3, minus the holding it up to the light stuff. So I think there are still good games. Persona 4 Golden, Tearaway, like there are plenty of things I would still recommend to people, but I don't know, it's just sad seeing that floodgates kind of slow down.
It would be hard to tell somebody to buy a PlayStation Vita right now if they were only buying it for upcoming games.
Exactly,
yeah.
But
if you could get a good deal and go back to the library.
And if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber.
Yeah. So weird because sometimes I feel like it is built so specifically for the things I like. Like, I'm going to play Lego Marvel on it. I'm going to play Danganronpa 3 on it. Like, there are still so many Vita-specific things that are coming that I'm just like,
but if
like,
you're into big cinematic sort of things, it's probably
you're never
going
to get a Fallout 4 on it. You're never going to get a Battlefront on
it. Yeah,
but
like, I've always said this, but if that's what you're into, what are you doing handheld gaming?
Yeah.
You know? I feel like...
It's going to be real good to be playing the new DOA Extreme, because if someone walks into my house, they can't see what's on the screen.
Stuck in the house.
No, I'm playing a game about real sports.
It's a real cool visual novel. I think that, you know, in a different world where Vita had done well, there probably would be a Battlefront game coming out this fall on it. It's stuff like that where you can kind of think of like those like slight, like easily you could have just a couple, like kind of the equivalent of that Call of Duty game that had four maps. You could get a Battlefront game like that this fall, but why would they bother?
I sometimes forget about that Call of Duty game on Vita.
It's atrocious. Yeah, it's not great. And then the same guys made the Resistance game as well.
I do have an odd fascination with that, though, like sort of demakes and seeing them appear on handhelds. I've always been kind of into that, especially when they take AAA console games, like the biggest games of the fall.
The DS Modern Warfare games and
stuff
like
that. Yeah, those were hilariously bad. Like, I remember playing Modern Warfare on Xbox, or no, I think it was on PS3, and at the very end of the game, there's like this, you know, bridge that explodes or whatever. Spoilers for anybody who gives a crap about that.
The bridge dies?
The bridge dies! Colonel Bridgeport! And they tried it on DS, and it was just like without all of the sort of cinematic beauty of like this helicopter crashing into a bridge. It was just like a JPEG of a helicopter appeared, and all of a sudden like a couple of polygons went in the air, and like the credits rolled, and it was like, you did that. Okay.
Well, but I mean, it's a weird thing where like the flip side of that is GTA Chinatown Wars, which is like on regular DS and on iOS now, and it's like it has none of the like actual graphical appeal of a GTA game, but the gameplay loop is absolutely there.
Which,
it's still really fun.
You and I asked some people at Rockstar to make a sequel to.
Yeah.
You know, they all love that game.
I would love that.
And it turns out that they're like, hey, we're going to stop working on GTA 6 just because these two weirdos broke into our studio.
That's our Homer Simpson car. They lose all this money, and then Red Dead 2 doesn't happen.
You know what? Screw it. Speaking of which, Gavin Connolly. Wait, wrong one. We'll come back to you, Gavin.
Sorry,
my bad. Where was it? Nick Spaulding says, what was the best video game related gift you got for your birthday? Asking because I just turned 18. Happy birthday. For me, it would probably be Simpsons Hit and Run. You said Homer Simpson car. I'm running with it for PS2. And love that game.
That was an oddly fun game. Like, I don't think it had any right to be as fun as it was. Mm-hmm. That was the kind of open world one, right?
It was just exploring Springfield.
Yeah, which was so cool. It was like the first time we got to do that. Mm-hmm. It's so weird that we grew up with a bunch of these cartoons that were very flat, and we never really thought about what their towns were like. They did the same thing with South Park Stick of Truth, where they're like, hey, we had to actually make a map of this town for the first time.
I remember being blown away by that they're like, this is the actual first definitive map of South Park. And it was so weird because I just never thought about that.
Like, I never thought about how far Homer has to go to get a slushy or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like that recreation of a virtual space. Because like games, I mean, like level design in games is obviously there's a science and an art to that. But like you look at sitcoms and they're like, where do we put three cameras?
Right.
Like they're always going to be they're rooms that are entirely oriented based on one of the walls.
The rooms are a diorama. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
The best video game gift I ever got was the year the Game Boy came out, which was I don't know if you guys remember the original box with the Game Boy. It came with Tetris, and it had those like wireframe hands on it.
Oh, yeah.
Just gorgeous looking. I opened up my Christmas presents, and I didn't get it, and I was really bummed out. But I was like happy I got a bunch of toys and stuff like that, and I went in the other room, and I was like, oh, maybe I can trade some stuff in or whatever, whatever the equivalent was back then. Shovel snow, mow lawns.
Yeah, beat up a kid.
And my mom was like, hey, you didn't check your stocking. And I went back to my stocking, and my stocking, like my brother had his stocking was like full of candy, and my other brother had another one full of candy, and mine just had a brick in it. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I pulled it out, and it was the Game Boy, and I just threw everything aside and ran in the other room and got four AA batteries that lasted for 2 hours.
There you go.
I feel like the last actual game thing I got for my birthday was like 15 years ago. I got a PS2 for my birthday, I think the 6 months or a year after it came out, and I remember getting it with Twisted Metal Black, Dark Cloud, and The Bouncer.
It's kind of the ultimate first world problem working this job that I don't get video games as gifts anymore because people assume I have them all.
Yeah.
Because I used to, like, there was something magical about somebody being like, here, play this, you know? And usually that person being very wrong about what I should have played.
So I didn't have a lot of video games growing up. I got a Game Boy Pocket with Pokemon Red for, I think, my 12th birthday, which is like my first, like, this is yours. This is yours for yourself. Yeah. And it was really exciting. This was a Christmas present a few years ago, but I got a PS3, and I was very much late to the party on that because I was borderline homeless and freelancing for video game websites, which is a weird problem to have. But my now fiance got me a PS3 for Christmas, and she is like cartoonishly bad at keeping presents a secret, and we were we were sitting there.
Did you put it in the middle of the living room with like a top hat on it?
No.
This is my friend George. He's quiet.
No, like, he's even quiet.
Except when you plug him in, because that fan was really loud.
Just put a poster that says Xbox 360 you already own on it or something.
This is Sony PlayStation.
We're sitting there, and it's like a quiet afternoon. And she's like, I can tell she's sort of thinking about something. We're on our computers or whatever. I'm playing Xbox or something. And she goes, hey, Nero and Hamza have PS3s, right? And I look at her, and she just like gets this sudden, just like panic deer in headlights look. And she's like, ah. And I'm like, did you get me a PS3? And she like just like convulses and just is like, maybe? Like, you just completely spoiled my Christmas present. And I, like, I didn't, like, what are you doing?
It's not like you were prying or anything.
I was,
no,
like,
not
at all. I was like, what? I was like, yeah. I was like, what? Did you do that? Did you? And then, yeah. It was, I don't know. I love that. And I was like, you got me a PS3? She's like, yeah. And I was like, that's really awesome. That's wonderful. Thank you.
That's like walking into a crime scene and being like, man, what a weird murder. I did it. Yeah. That was me. Stuck the knife right in his neck.
I mean, that's like pulling out the murder weapon and being like, oh, that's not my phone. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. No, that was really, it kind of killed the surprise there, but it was, you know, really, mm-hmm. real cool present. And then I think I got to open it early. Oh, God. I think the first thing I played was Metal Gear Solid 4.
Nice.
Because I'd played like Heavy Rain and Metal Gear Solid 4 and a bunch of other games at other people's houses. And yeah. I was just like, then it was that kind of like, oh man, what tutorials do I want to revisit?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird because like every gift I got like as a kid was like the best. Like all the games I would get for Christmas, I basically only got new games on Christmas or my birthday.
Yep.
So it's like the games I got were like Link to the Past, like Ocarina of Time, like Chrono Trigger, Earthbound,
games.
Like basically all the games that like defined like me as a like gamer basically, mm-hmm. and like all the things I love are the things I got as presents. So it's like I basically never got a bad video game as a present. Mm-hmm. Maybe one,
not yet.
Yeah, you're gonna get me a bad video game as a present.
I want to fix that.
All right, give me an awful Christmas present.
What should I get you?
What did we almost get him in Germany?
Oh, yeah, there was an awesome horse game, 3DS horse game I wanted to get you. It was like Horse Academy, but it was like had 90 German words all over
it. Why
don't
you get it?
Because it was like 30 euros.
It's really expensive.
Oh, wow. That's not even real money.
I got you Equine Trainer at the potato place in that's Japan.
Yeah, and I brought you a bunch of Star Wars toys to my house.
Yeah, yes, I left some trash on your desk last week.
You did?
Yeah. I think Pablo probably cleaned it up because it was litter. But
all right, I peed in your garbage can.
That's I not even that my garbage can. All right,
No Man's Sky.
Yeah, No Man's Sky. Is that a game yet?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I almost wish they hadn't. So they announced that it's coming in June of 2016.
Yeah,
I almost wish they would have just given us a date because like giving us a nebulous window makes me nervous that this isn't going to stick.
Yeah,
and it's been so like this has now been. When was this first announced? It was the VGAs 2 years ago, 2013, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, this will have been 2.5 years by the time it comes out, which is even longer than, like, Watch Dogs. You know, it'll be one of those things where, like, this is one of the longer...
I'm kind of pissed off about that, you know?
Well, I mean, it's like, obviously a game like this is hard. They're a small studio. I completely get how ambitious this is and how I think this game looks really cool. But I would almost rather you just are quiet about it rather than, like, give us a nebulous date 9 months out that...
Well, I mean, in this case, and I'm usually right there with you guys because I hate hearing about a game... sitting and waiting and thinking about playing a game for 2 years, which was like, yeah. I'm really excited about the new Star Wars movie, but if you look at the timeline on that, like we really only thought it would be a thing like what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like, not only are we getting that movie, but a whole bunch of others in the, you know, different timelines and stuff like that, plus new merch, all this other stuff. They just, new games, everything.
We had to wait 6 months between trailers. We saw 15 minutes of this game on what, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, one of those shows. Yeah.
So, this is the only case where I think it was a good idea for these guys to show their hand early because they it ended up having Sony come in and basically being like, we can help you with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, this was a very, very tiny team.
Well, yeah, and this was the
or a small team. There, I mean, I assume they're all regular size.
I've met them. They're regular size humans.
Yep.
They used to work at a cobbler's shop and they would come down from the rafters and help them make shoes.
They lived in that cool tree where all the cookies come from. This was the Hello Games is the team that made Joe Danger. And so they sort of, in order to be solidified as, hey, pay attention to this in the same breath you pay attention to Uncharted and Final Fantasy.
Right.
They sort of had to create this long tail.
And that's crazy that it's the same studio, by the way.
Right? It is insane.
Well, it's like going from writing like Laffy Taffy jokes to writing like a 600-page novel.
Yeah. We've talked about how like the twist ending of that game should be like you land on a certain planet, like it's like at the center of everything, and you get out, and like you're just walking around, it looks normal, and you realize it's Earth, and like you keep walking for a little while, and you realize you're in the Hello Games office, and you pass a mirror, and it, like the camera finally pulls out to third person, you've been Joe Danger for the entire game.
Yeah,
that's the twist. That would be the dumbest thing.
That's the twist.
No, another studio that I think is like this is the guys who did Sleeping Dogs, United Front Games.
Oh yeah,
because they came up with this badass like Hong Kong action game, and it was like, what else have they done?
The Little Big Planet karting.
Yeah, and then it was like. Was there anything? It was one of their
Mod Nation racers.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, they have their hand in a lot of weird things. But yeah, I mean, that's why like there's so many very talented studios that you don't hear about because they're support studios, and then they come out of nowhere seemingly to make their own game, but you find out they've been there for like 20 years. You know,
yeah.
I think it's like a really interesting phenomenon in games that like you have these studios that do nothing but support. Like, oh, they made the multiplayer for this and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's interesting. Like, there's that studio, Certain Affinity, announced they had recruited the lead writer or the kind of franchise writer for all of Assassin's Creed fairly recently, Corey May. And that's it. Like, we don't know what they're doing. We don't know, like, what they're working on. But they said they want to get into AAA games. And that's, like, a pretty good name to start with. And I think, like, things like that are really interesting because, like, maybe they'll come out of nowhere. It's something really cool.
Yeah.
Like, Armature announced ReCore at E3. And it's, like, I really want to see what that studio can do when they're not making Batman, Arkham Origins, Blackgate.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. So just a couple interesting things about No Man's Sky. The nebulous June release date is interesting because it's like, well, does that mean it's coming out before E3, or after E3?
Exactly.
E3 is the 14th through the 16th of June. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if it's going to be in that sort of Last of Us, right? Well, I guess Last of Us came out during E3.
We played it the week before, but yeah, it came out that week. And then this year there was one too.
Batman came out right after.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
I think it's a really smart release date for anybody who doesn't work in games, and we're like, we're a bunch of big old nasty babies.
It's the perfect summer vacation day, basically.
But also because that's when everyone's eyes are on gaming. That's when stuff will be trending, and it's when it's like people are going to be talking about it. And if you're just like, hey, you can play it right now, and then everyone's going to be like, oh, I'm going to actually play a game instead of just looking at games that might come out this fall.
If you look back to May and June of this year, like Witcher owned May and Batman owned June. So it's not like it's February where you're competing with 150 other games or November.
I feel like that would have been their biggest. Yeah. I mean, like February. And again, we got yet another one during this show because now Street Fighter V is coming out. Like February is so packed. But I think distancing themselves from it is smart. Also, like, I think kind of the big question with No Man's Sky is if like PlayStation VR and maybe by June.
I totally think this is going to be aligned with PlayStation.
No, and that's the thing, exactly. And I think by June, maybe PlayStation VR is out or close to being out, and so maybe it makes more sense in that way.
So we got some questions from the group. First off, Bradley Rivard says, do you guys actually believe No Man's Sky will be out in 2016?
Yes.
You do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually don't. I don't believe a video game is out until I'm holding it. Like,
You've been hurt before.
There are so many times where it's like, this is the date, we're committing to it, you can pre-order it here, you can get it there. Until it's in my hands or someone in the office is playing a final retail version that was mailed to us in a shrink wrap box, it's still up in the air. Anything can go at any moment.
6 months ago on Podcast Unlock, our Xbox podcast that I also co-host.
Traitor.
I was on that one before. You're on NBC.
Traitor.
6 months ago, I said Rise of Tomb Raider was going to be the game that got delayed this fall.
Right.
And I still claim that, even though the game has gone gold.
Really?
Yep. Because that's the hill I chose to die on.
No way. You're still fighting for that?
The game has gone gold. The bundle's coming out. Someone probably has it in this office now.
No, it can't. What
if the factory burns down? What if the tomb crumbles?
The tomb will crumble.
Yeah, you have to jump off part of it. It's real exciting.
Yeah, that's the whole point of that game. You go on some old stuff and you wreck it with your feet.
Yeah. A whole snake?
You don't know anything about Tomb Raider.
God. I've been to tomb.
You can die on a hill, though. If you James want to Cunningham die on a hill, asks, you can die in the game.
Yeah, you can die on the hill in that game. James Cunningham asks, the release date for No Man's Sky is receiving negative backlash. So my question is this. What do you guys think is the optimum window between initial announcement and actual launch? Beyond.
Fallout.
Yeah,
6 months.
Completely.
Yeah. 6 to 9 months. I mean, it's hard. Like, I did. Oh, I hate you.
69 months.
They showed these new bundles.
It would hurt your
They
neck.
Showed the two European bundles. during the beginning of the conference, they were showing the two bundles. There was one for $349, and then one was called the Ultimate Player Bundle for $399.
Yep.
And Marty just looks at me and goes, Ultimate Player.
like, you didn't want to
see. I was just chuckling at the fact that you said European bundles.
bunch of children.
I saw some nice European bundles at that beer garden in Germany.
No, I think between 6 and 9 months is smart.
Six and nine.
Is smart. I think, you know, I helped out with marketing stuff when I was at Gearbox. Like, I get it. I get how complicated it is to, like, get a PR train rolling and to announce all that stuff. But, like, there's very much such thing as too long. On the other hand, though, I think, you know, it's that dumb recycled Trite Miyamoto quote, but it's very accurate, which is like a
delayed game is delayed for
a bad game is bad forever, but a delayed game is eventually good. But, or, I'm paraphrasing.
That was terrible. You butchered his meaning.
If you delay a game, it's eventually good. If it comes out and it's bad.
Necessarily. If you delay a game, it can still be bad.
No, well, of course. But what I'm saying is, if you delay it and it ends up being good, the delay was worth it. Whereas if you rush it to make people happy, it might be bad. That's, I guess.
Miyamoto also had the meaning. Quote, "Smoke weed every day."
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of that song.
Yeah, he said, "Never get high in your own supply."
That was Nate
the point. Being that it's like people are so mad that this is further away than they thought it would be, but like, I'm sure those people would rather have it be good.
So
than
I think the issue in April and so this is why Watch Dogs kind of suffered, because I think where this hurts the most is really overly ambitious games, because I think people's head kind of start to wander to the moon where they go, oh, you can do this and this, and they must be working on this and this. Like, it's one thing when like a 2D platformer gets delayed by 2 years, you're like, oh, you're just tightening up the mechanics of it all, or maybe you're adding some new levels and boss fights. But with Watch Dogs, like the first time we saw it versus actually playing it years later, the amount of things we thought we'd be able to do in that game versus the fact that you basically just drove around, walked around a game with a phone in your hand, telling traffic lights to stop working. I think that's the worrisome thing here.
Well, yeah. There's a certain pageantry to announcement and marketing leading up to a game, and we're all really close to it, so we're like, hey, this is like, I mean, all of you guys watching and listening at home, like it's the same deal where we follow this stuff closely. If you pay attention to when something is announced and when new things about it are released and when they talk about it more, mm-hmm. there's a whole lot of people out there who do not give a damn when a game comes out. They will maybe they'll be like, oh, this is out, or maybe they'll walk into a store having no idea what they're going to get, and they're going to like, oh, Watch Dogs, you hack stuff, that's cool, and they buy it and have a good time.
Or they miss half the preview beats because they're a normal person with a normal life.
There's a really interesting kind of dichotomy between Ubisoft and Rockstar. Mm-hmm. I mean, GTA 5, we got that announced in a very, very brief, very simple announcement trailer that was pretty much the cinematics. You know, mm-hmm. it's very, very cutscene-y.
VO, it's
you
like have, a set of motto.
And everyone's looking at there's a dog, there's a bicycle, you're in Los Santos, and they showed off kind of, they give you a sense of what you're looking at. And I mean, Bethesda does similar stuff. I think it was a little bit shorter of a tale most of the time. But Rockstar really is like, they get it. And they're like, here is kind of an idea of what our game is without going too hard into mechanics. And then they trickle out screenshots and they eventually show off gameplay and everybody eats it up a whole lot. They have a very kind of almost clinical approach to like, welcome to Los Santos. You're going to be switching between three characters. Here's what the multiplayer looks like. This will be coming after the game. And they're very like, everything's kind of compartmentalized and very straightforward. Meanwhile, Watch Dogs was like, here's everything.
Yeah.
Yep. And then they followed it up by being like, but wait, there's some more everything. And they're like, hold on. It's not finished yet. We're going to have to push it. Sorry, we're pushing it again. And at that point, it's like, you've shown everything. Like, it's not, people get fatigued.
Yeah,
people
well, not
get
only
tired
have you shown everything, but
it.
You've shown a sort of not really indicative version of what you're going to be playing in the final thing. Like, people did graphics comparisons mm-hmm. of what we first saw with Watch Dogs, which was running on, you know, the best PCs in the world.
And that was before next-gen. Like, they announced that when the next-gen systems had not been announced.
Hadn't been announced, no specs or anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
So, like, they probably were running at a spec that ended up being slightly higher than next-gen.
Yeah, the kind of gross reality, too, about finding out when video games are being announced and released and stuff like that is that a lot of them are tied to just, like, quarterly investor meetings and stuff like that.
They're products.
Sorry. And I think a lot of people miss that. They're just like, oh, they're doing this because it's a really exciting time of year. And it's like, no, there was probably just a bunch of people that were investing that wanted to bail out, but then they saw this new thing and they realized that, you know, they should stick around for a while because they're going to make a ton of money off of this.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that showing off the kind of technical side of things, showing off mechanics, it is showing your work more than showing like just a cinematic trailer.
Yeah.
But for something like ReCore, for instance, I think it's a really good way of going about it. You're like, here is a sizzle reel. We are not selling you steak. You get the steak later when we cook it, but here's the sizzle. Here's what the basic idea is. And I worry kind of that No Man's Sky maybe is showing too much of its hand. You know, I don't know. We have to wait and see. If they say it's attached to VR, that's another story entirely.
Yeah. I feel like I know both everything and nothing about that game. Like, I mean, I've watched gameplay of it. Like, we did a bunch of IGN First stuff that if you didn't watch, like, I highly recommend going back to, because that gave me my best picture of what that game actually was moment to moment.
Yeah.
But I still don't know if that's enough. Like, I don't know how satisfying that loop is. And I mean, we're going to talk about dreams in a little bit. It's kind of that same thing, right? Like, at what point is a really, really cool thing actually going to sustain it and make me want to play for 6 months?
Yeah, or that's exactly it. And I mean, to add to that with the VR conversation, VR doesn't necessarily make a disappointing game great. Yeah. Like, bad games can be bad in VR. You know,
that was
like
the famous Miyamoto quote.
Famous Miyamoto quote.
You've got it right. There you go. I think VR, I really don't like VR.
Another famous Miyamoto quote is, murder was the case that they gave us.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't done a lot of VR extensively, but I don't like most of what I played. It just, I think, not for me.
You and I played, you played a VR game at Comic-Con that just wasn't very good.
Yep.
That you didn't really like.
Yep. That, and it's like, I don't, you know, I understand that is a personal thing, and like that's why I ended up not writing about it or really talking about it. Like, I just... There are a lot of VR games I really actively dislike. I don't like strapping the thing to my face. And I know that's such a stupid complaint, but it's like I've now spent multiple hours in VR, and that's still, even years later, even as the technology's gotten better, like I just don't like it.
I'm open to it, but like a game with a bad camera system, you know, is still going to be bad, possibly worse in VR. Like there's a lot of things that have to be taken into account for. And No Man's Sky, if the game turns out to be not as ambitious as we wanted it to be, simply being able to play it in 3D first person in VR is not going to change what it is or isn't, you know?
So I think for some people that technology is so exciting, and I totally don't want to, you know, crap all over it because I know those people
are. But let's be realistic here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes a bad game comes out and just putting it in VR is not necessarily going to save it.
Sure.
Well, there's also the kind of psychology of what sells games, what makes games exciting. I think one of the reasons that we always have a Ridge Racer as a launch title is that it has cars going fast and they are bright and it is exciting and it is colorful, but that does not translate to when you are experiencing it in VR. It is nauseating and upsetting. The camera system idea, like so far we've seen a lot of VR stuff. It's almost kind of inherently first person.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't really have to be. It got announced that Tekken 7 is going to be coming to PlayStation VR, which everyone goes, why?
Yeah.
Yeah, and what was it Insomniac during the Oculus conference showed a really cool
third person
VR game?
Yeah.
It was like that ice exploration one. So I think that can be done, and I love those kinds of games. It's just like I think most of the time, for me personally, I'm probably going to prefer them with a controller, and I will keep trying VR. I hope I find that one game that makes me get it and makes me as excited as everybody else. But like having tested almost every single different, I've never played HoloLens, I guess, but having tested everything else, I haven't found that thing that makes it click for me yet.
Well, it's sort of like when they put like You've Got Mail on Blu-ray, and you're like, ooh.
Why?
Are you just padding, are you padding the library here?
Because Dave Chappelle is really funny in it. He's supporting, and it's that real cute. There's that scene where they're in the bookstore. Where...
Andrew, shut up.
Damn it, Andrew.
I mean, there was a whole VR. I mean, Shuhei came out, and there was an entire VR section. Do you want to just go over a couple of the things?
Yeah, really quick? He was so happy and cute during that segment.
I know, he's the best.
Yeah, shout out to Shuhei. What a nice man. We got to get him back on the show soon.
We will.
Yeah.
Crytek showed off, showed off again, Robinson, The Journey, which they showed off, and they revealed in June, but we didn't know what it was coming to.
They showed literally concept art for it in June. Like, this is the first footage we've seen of it, I believe. And it looks really cool, but that trailer was also kind of like what you were talking about earlier. Like, it was like, I don't feel like any of that was the actual game. That was that sort of proof of concept of what they wanted to be.
You're a kid sort of lost in space, and you have this flying robot companion that kind of looks like the ghost from Destiny.
Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, Robinson. And then, there's all sorts of dinos that look spooky. So we don't know what type of a game it is, but I mean, it looked
some of the dinos looked cute.
There were cute dinos, but then there were spooky ones. Just like humans.
Real bad one.
And like dogs. I've seen a real nice dog, and then I saw a mean dog once.
That's true.
No, but I love that idea, and stuff like trees look great in Crytek games. Mm-hmm. So this is really cool to see that. And I love dinosaurs. I think it's really cool. There's a more traditional dinosaur game.
Yeah.
I don't know really what that really means when there's a robot flying around.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe they had those. We don't know a lot about those times.
Yeah.
With VR, we're kind of going back to... really before the PlayStation was around, when it was kind of like you could completely sell a game based on graphics alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be, if you're like, it's got polygons, they're here, they're real cubed and sort of 3D looking. But in this case, it's like, how does that, the gameplay, it's not that it doesn't matter. I'd say that it sort of matters less in VR.
Yeah.
Because if it's a lot easier for gameplay that isn't conducive to kind of to VR to really, really mess it up.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, it's like the launch of any new platform, right? Like, there are always those launch titles, like on the Vita and PS3 and many other systems are guilty of it, where it's like they're trying to show off features, so they're like not the best games in the system because they're basically just there to introduce you to the idea of here's how this mechanic can work.
Yeah.
And then it takes 5 years for someone to figure out an actual cool application for that thing. Like, I think VR, like all of these early games, like we're going to look back on and they'll be the ones where it was like, oh, well, that was a proof of concept, but here's how, like, here's when it became actually like a valuable tool for gameplay.
Yeah.
I have no doubt it can get there. Like, as long as people actually like support the platform when it launches.
You look at a game like Knack and watching the character blow up or expand or shrink based on the different voxels and stuff like that, and bits and pieces of them gathering, really just showed off what they could do with the character models in that game.
Yeah.
But then you look at Resogun, and they basically had cubes exploding everywhere, and now that's, you know, that's what their next game looks like. So
yeah.
I think you're totally right in that it's like, here's a tech demo for something that's never fully truly realized, but they're treating VR like it's going to be a console launch.
Yeah, I mean, they had a sizzle reel where they showed a bunch of different things. They showed a Battlezone remake. They showed Rig. They showed Final Fantasy XIV, Heavensward, which I mean, so many people in this office are obsessed with that. So yep.
And during TGS, they had a big screen of all the people developing for PlayStation VR, which is really cool too. Because there's Danganronpa, there's Final Fantasy XIV. There were a lot of cool little, like, there were a lot of studio names up there where you're like, huh, that could be really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think PlayStation VR having the backing of Sony behind it and PS4, everything has gone so well so far. Like, I really do have a lot of faith in Sony's first-party studios that they can make something really cool for it. And I don't want to discount the platform. I don't want to come across as somebody who is just like crossing his arms and patting his feet and saying no to it. I just so far haven't enjoyed it at all.
Yeah, I think I can get that. I was gonna say I get that a lot, where we try to have conversations on this show about how, not that we're skeptical about VR, but like, let's look at the entire situation here instead of just like, it'll change the world, it's the future. Like, we can call it those things and also sort of be like, yeah, but what about this? And yeah, what about that? Like, I'm on board. I think I love the idea of VR, but the games have to be there and they have to be mechanically sound, and I don't want to spend a ton of time in that helmet if it's going to be disorienting and weird and I'm just playing bad launch.
It's a Vita all over again too. Like, if people support it, if it does really well, then you'll get a million more VR games. If no one buys it at launch, then you're not going to get many more VR
right.
games.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit different because you look at the Vita and it looks like an overpriced Game Boy to the general public. At VR, it looks like,
of course,
stock image for the future.
But it's still, going to be a whatever $300, $400, $500 thing. Sure. I'm just saying, like any platform, like if no one buys it, they're not going to make games for it.
Worth talking about, I think there's the Tekken 7 thing is really fascinating because that's like the first really big name like third person game we've seen with VR.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking about over here. I talked to Ted Price about the Insomniac game I think that's an Oculus game.
It is.
It was at the Oculus event.
Yeah.
And then there's also another one by one of the guys who worked on Words with Friends, I want to say.
Was that the third person platformer?
Yeah, Lucky the Fox. Yeah.
Oh, right.
And it was kind of, I haven't felt that stupid asking questions in quite a while, because you're like, why did you make a third person VR game? And effectively, it makes the camera control on the controller sort of unnecessary, because it's one of those, I haven't actually done it myself. I'm really curious about how it works.
Oh, I've done some of them and they're awesome, actually.
In theory, it's it's the most intuitive camera control you could have. So you're only using, you're going back to how it was when you're moving your character with one stick.
Yeah.
With something like Tekken, it makes a ton of sense because you got to think about in terms of scale. Because look at like when somebody modded VR support for Team Fortress 2 and they had like the scout who, if you're doing it in terms of one-to-one scale, is running at like 70 miles an hour or something, which human beings are not supposed to be doing when they're, if your eye line is 6 feet off the ground and your thing should not be moving that fast at you, that's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of, you get the hang of it, playing when you're playing as a video game kind of more traditionally. But if you're playing with VR, it's really upping the immersion or whatever. But if you're playing as effectively a cameraman, you're controlling the view, the camera is not in the head of the person you're playing. It's kind of like simultaneously filming an MMA fight and also being in it with Tekken.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. I'm curious about how Ted Price's game, because you're like more of like you're kind of over the shoulder of this guy.
Yeah.
For platforming stuff, basically it makes depth perception a whole lot more intuitive. Mm-hmm. Because normally if you're like moving the camera and you got to figure out where you're going to jump and where your guy's going to land, maybe you're looking for a shadow as a cue. But in this case, you can actually, flip your head down and be like, oh, that platform is out of my reach. I'm going to fall into a pit.
It's that weird like persistence of vision thing where like if you literally just walk down the street and hold a camera, when you watch the footage, it's like bobbing up and down. Whereas like when you're walking normally, you don't see that because your eyes sort of compensate for it. Yeah, it's weird like thinking about camera placement and like, I don't know, that is really interesting that like, I guess I hadn't thought about like a third person VR game.
I mean, Mike Bithell announced that Volume's coming to VR.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of leads into Tyler Floyd running and ask, what existing franchise do you want to see move to VR? And I guess people normally think of first person, which and when you think of stuff, I was like, man, everybody got into the Rapture or
right.
Firewatch or stuff like
Far
that
Cry.
Would be cool. Far Cry.
Yeah.
And then we saw like Supermassive's working on Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, which is going to be a first person, like literally on rails. You're sort of in this
messed up
carnival. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like a shooting gallery, arcadey, spooky thing. Yeah, I don't know. Are there any things you guys can think of that?
I mean, like after watching the conference today, like I think within about 1 second, I want Dreams on VR. I feel like that's the smartest place for that game. And we can talk about Dreams kind of more extensively too. But I think like as a VR game, that might be the best fit for that I can think of as far as like Sony's first party lineup.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I don't know what the hell that game is. We should, you know, probably talk about that. I think that Fallout 4, I mean, even Fallout 3 could work pretty cool if it wasn't, if you know, you really had it running super high res. But the fact that you can swap into turn-based when you need to with VATS, like that's makes a lot of sense with VR. Because like VR is not really necessarily good for fast-paced combat type stuff, but like the rate at which you move in Fallout is pretty slow. It's kind of like going for a long hike, you know, in a horrible, horrible place.
Yeah.
So I'm open to that. Yeah, I don't think even Witcher would be really something. I think I said before I'd love that, but like maybe if you had the third person camera stuff going on,
yeah,
be curious to see. I'm surprised nobody's modded that into first person yet, or if they have, I haven't checked it out.
Right, those big like third person gigantic open world games like a GTA or a Skyrim or whatever are just not what I want.
Me
I think,
either.
And it's like weird because I remember there's like obviously that like omnidirectional treadmill Skyrim demo someone put on YouTube a few years ago that's like entirely in VR and you can walk in any direction you're actually walking, and it's just like that is just not
I don't want to spend that much time
in
VR to play one game, you know. I mean, I understand that the immersion of that world will increase, which is really awesome to be able to walk out around Fallout's world in VR, but like if I'm going to spend 100 hours in that game, like I don't know if I'm ready to do that.
Yeah, I would almost want something shorter.
I mean, I'd swap in and out. I wouldn't want to put the whole thing in there. But like the idea that you can get a sense of space, you know, like walk into a building and like look up and see the roof, you know, and like, or just, you know, when you're rooting around in an old toilet looking for buckets of Dandy Boy apples, like maybe you just, I want to see that.
Well, and that's
first
like
person.
The swapping in and out thing is the biggest unanswered question for me with PlayStation VR, which is that we have yet to see that big marquee game that is both. That is, hey, if you want to throw on your PlayStation VR headset, play for a while in VR, then take it off, sit in your couch, play with a normal controller, do your thing. Like, that is sort of really interesting to me, and I wonder if they'll let you dip your toe.
That has to be.
No Man's Sky feels like the perfect testing bed for that. Like, because, again, like a huge, like a Horizon, actually, something like that is really smart. Because, like, like a lot of people talked about, like, Drive Club, because I guess Evolution were the ones testing the VR headset. That makes sense to me, but like driving games and things like that are less interesting than maybe that open world idea like Max was saying, or like a No Man's Sky. But
it's gonna be really curious to see what gets attached, because there will be at least one thing that works with, like one big thing that we are all like, holy crap, this is on VR.
Yeah.
We got, you know, the Vita got an Uncharted game. You know, there's going to be something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's like one of the big things that must be waiting to reveal.
What if it's DOA Extreme?
Maybe it will. Maybe it's God of War. You can rip someone's heart out, literally.
I mean, really awful. Really, really awful.
Still not literally.
Fair enough.
That is highly illegal.
So I do want to talk about Dreams really quick. I'm a real big nerd I love the Little Big Planet games. I actually have been playing a bunch of Mario Maker. Like, I think those games are smart and cool. I was like freaking out during that Dreams reveal during the demo during the conference today, because it's like an open world that someone built. It is entirely created by a user in a 3D space, which is something that you don't have in Little Big Planet or Super Mario. Like, those are kind of those side-scrolling things, and Project Spark I guess had to some degree, but I don't think it's quite as robust as what this could be. Now the biggest question, as Sam Claiborne pointed out, our managing editor, is what the menus look like, what that kind of control looks like, because that'll make or break a game like this on how easy it is to actually, and I mean, I remember them saying during E3 that like you can kind of get down to that like subatomic, like nuclear level, and really like build the engine, build the behavior, build the logic. They haven't really shown any of that stuff. Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm really curious to see.
Even how you're physically building the things. They're like trees. And like, none of these are pre-created. Everything is user-created. There was like a statue of Abraham Lincoln. And it's like, none of these are pre-created. And it's like, why the hell am I doing this?
So then? During E3, and that's again why this feels like such a smart fit for VR. During E3, they showed like, it's literally sculpting. I mean, you are creating this. If you go
it's
back
not literally
to the...
sculpting.
I hate you.
It's digitally sculpting.
It is digitally sculpting. If you go back to the very first, the PS4 reveal event in February 2013, they actually demoed Dreams. Mm-hmm. Like, its Media Molecules tech demo was Dreams, and that's what they're doing. They're sculpting into 3D space and just showing you that they can create these objects, and they're doing it. You know, they showed that little, like, weird, what is it, the imp today that lets you control kind of where the cursor is. Clearly, there's a much more robust method of controlling that and being precise, and that's kind of
what if it's VR and a Move controller, I'm all about it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that makes so much sense, right? And I think they were even doing with Move controllers in that original demo.
Yeah.
That just feels like it makes so much sense, and so I'm very, very curious to see, because Media Molecule, coming off of Tearaway, is really smart about incorporating technology. I think they're really good at making it not feel gimmicky, making it feel natural.
Yeah, I think Tearaway might be the best use of the Vita of all its weird quirks and gadgets.
And even Unfolded, like the little things like blowing and the way the light bar interacts, like, is really smart. So I don't know. Like, we really don't understand the ins and outs of this. They said there's a beta in 2016. I would be so excited to just try this game, because I think Media Molecule, I don't think they're a sales powerhouse by any means, but I think as far as creativity, like, they're a studio that I hope is always around. I just, in the same way I want Nintendo to stay weird, I want Media Molecule to stay weird. I want them to be taking risks and doing this weird stuff, because, like, yeah, we can have 1,000, you know, Killzones and Uncharteds and even Horizon and things like that are these really exciting big projects, but, like, this is the stuff that I think pushes the medium forward, is when people get really, really creative and weird with it. So
they're making stuff out of burlap sacks and paper.
Exactly.
And this one appears to be asbestos. Yes. It's the grittiest reboot they could have.
But I love, like,
gives the kids all lung problems.
It's almost that weird, like, watercolory look. Like,
I don't think it's watercolor. It looks like cotton candy, but real dirty.
The sculpting part of it does, but I think, like, if you go back and watch that E3 trailer, it's like this weird, like, brushstroke look to it. And it's just like, I don't know, like, it looks so tangible. Like, that's why I think VR is a good place for it, because it does. It looks like you want to move it with your hands.
I think it's gorgeous and ambitious and beautiful, and I'm excited for it. But when we see these things during press conferences, I want to take a nap. It feels like Wonder Book 2015 remix.
Yep. Oh, man. See, I disagree.
I don't think these things demo well at all in the middle of a... in the full packed crowd in the press conference.
They need to give it to somebody on a show floor and say, check this out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a guided demo of that
and
would
nothing should be that long on a
Yeah.
I feel like nothing should be more than 5 minutes on a
right.
show
See,
floor.
To me, like, the Gran Turismo stuff dragged like crazy.
Oh, 100%.
But this, to me, like, I didn't find boring at all.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Uncharted 4 for like a minute, and then we see Dreams for 10. So it was, or whatever it was.
Yeah,
it was,
I mean,
felt
I think
like 10.
Every single second of that Dreams demo was more excited to me than anything they showed Uncharted 4 multiplayer.
See, I would watch like a 30-minute documentary about how the systems work in that game.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
like, just to really deep dive. But I think in
the
terms
press
of
conference
like,
isn't the
here's
place
a press
for
conference,
it.
Like,
that I agree with.
Yeah.
Full crowd clapping and cheering for everything.
And I guess we should talk about the Uncharted 4 multiplayer demo. I think Last's multiplayer was really smart and tried something different and new that I thought was, you know, I didn't play that much of it, but I totally understand why people got super into it. And it was like a really cool kind of taking what made the core game, like the campaign, smart and kind of putting it into a multiplayer setting where it made sense to play with other teams. Uncharted multiplayer has kind of just been run and gun always. And they added this thing called Mysticals to Uncharted 4, where it's like you can do supernatural stuff.
You can shake your ass.
You can watch yourself.
Yeah.
You could show us all what you're working with.
These are all Mystical songs. Famous rapper.
That was actually the same song. It was just the bridge that we finished.
End of all our Mystical references.
I'd like to print a correction for earlier in the episode when I inferred that Mystical was famous. I'm getting note that that's changed a lot since 1997.
Yeah, it was weird to see like Elena set herself on fire and run through the map and then to like throw a scary, spooky demon box out in the middle of the map.
And that's the thing. It's like what Max was saying earlier about wanting a story and being ready for a story. Like, I just don't... I like the Uncharted games for their story. I like the single player stuff. And I think the multiplayer is totally fun enough. I played a decent amount of Uncharted 3 just to try it. And I think it's like well designed. It's fun. And it is like for people who like multiplayer games, I think it is like really good and fun and fast paced. Introducing supernatural stuff is just so funny and weird to see before we even know anything about the narrative.
None of
though.
This is going
to
be canon. You know, you're going to be able to have Nate shoot Sully in the face probably. Like it's just there's going to be stuff that wouldn't happen in the main story. Mm-hmm. Like, Darren came up and was like, hey, is Battlefront canon? And I was like, no. It's like as canon as people playing with toys in their yard.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be whenever you have I mean, multiplayer is never canon, and if it is, it's very boring. You know, yeah. It's just a bunch of silly nonsense.
And
happening.
I mean, like Naughty Dog, in terms of single player games, are almost in a league of their own in terms of these giant, you know, awesome
100%
like cinematic narrative games. Like, yeah, like Tomb Raider is obviously an obvious comparison coming out this year. But whereas with multiplayer, it's like, well, are people going to jump to this other than Battlefront or Call of Duty or Halo 5? And so,
people oddly stuck to the last few Uncharted multiplayers, which I was like. It wasn't for me, but I understand why people got into it. It's because once you get a hang of those systems, I mean, it plays very differently than Battlefront does. You know, yeah, even if they're both third person at times.
And it's also like the people at Naughty Dog are incredibly talented, and that does apply to map design. Like those maps are smart and they're pretty and they're really cool. I just, it's, you know, I guess sort of like VR conversations isn't my thing.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about a cinematic reveal for multiplayer. You know, I think for story stuff it makes a ton of sense because it's like a movie trailer, but like. When you're just kind of, I'm just like, this looks like a kind of like a gum commercial that makes you catch fire. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's going to be cool, but like, I don't know how you, I think that that's one of those things that does really a really good job just demoing it on a show floor. You know?
Sure. Yeah. And which we're going to,
which they're doing.
Yeah. It's on the show floor. So we'll have hands on impressions.
And I think all of us will probably play the beta in December. Oh, yeah, like, totally. I definitely want to try this before. Sure. I mean, we saw 1 minute and a half long trailer. Like, we don't actually know a lot about it, but I'm so definitely curious to see.
I mean, since we talk about it every week, we gloss over super quick of the new Battlefront trailer that, you know, we saw that, I think, right before the Uncharted trailer. So, wowzers. I mean, what did you guys think of that?
Oh man, I keep thinking that they've shown us everything, and then I realize that they haven't shown us everything, and I realize that I really want to play this game, and I'm totally on board with this game. Mm-hmm. There's all the, like, I was complaining last week about there's not enough aliens. In
they showed a ton of aliens.
And they're like, they showed us, yeah, they like the Keldor, which is the Plo Koon gas mask species. They got the Duros, which are the first aliens you see in the cantina. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got the Quarren, which is what Jabba's accountant is.
Yeah, I have that.
I'm really happy about that.
There's tetanus, which is the disease that the Rancor Keeper has.
Yeah.
From getting,
he's got gout.
Rubbing up against, he definitely has gout.
Yeah, there's hepatitis.
He's Gamorrean gout.
He's got weird worms problems.
Yeah,
It's weird because when we did the show a couple weeks ago, I was the only one like really kind of hot on this, and I think when you guys had played the beta, and we're sort of just like, yeah, it's cool, but it's not exactly what I want. And I think they're kind of filling out the areas that now that make you go, okay, this is really. The Star Wars game that I've wanted for.
Yeah, I'm in.
And it's just so easy to get excited when you see Han firing his blaster and killing a bunch of fools, or Leia throwing down what looked like a spooky ghost trap from Ghostbusters, first-person Boba Fett.
Yeah, first-person Boba Fett. I believe that's the first time we've seen the EE3 Blast Tech blaster rifle in first-person. That's pretty exciting to me. I like that.
Yeah, EE3 has its whole blaster rifle.
EE3.
Did you see when he jumped over the Sarlacc?
Yeah, and he's like, not this time.
Yeah.
We were on the show saying a few weeks ago, like, I want a Tatooine stage where you can jump over Sarlacc pits. Like the gas holes in Sullus that were
Do we bleep that? I don't think
those gas holes on Sullus. Chewie, watch out for those gas holes.
Gavin Connolly said, what Star Wars hero character would you add to Battlefront? For me, it has to be Lando. I have had enough with humans. I want to see some really weird stuff going on. I would love it. I had an idea for this. I would love Jabba as a hero. And he rolls out on his dais or on like a skiff or whatever. And he comes out, but he's got like six like NPC bodyguards and a shield around him, so all your friends can kind of hop up on your dais
into a warthog and
but you like roll out and you're like, you're pretty slow, but you've got people, you've got AI protecting you, and you've got like your dudes can all come gather around a bonus or something.
I want like a 5v1 like evolve style rancor mode where basically there's there's a rancor and everyone's gonna take it down.
I would also love if there was a mode where there's a bunch of really crappy heroes and that it's random, like you get a hero thing like, maybe I'm gonna get the emperor, and then you just get like a dead tauntaun.
You get Porkins.
He's like, I can't run.
He's just coming back from a lunch break. You're just holding a cup of coffee in front of yourself. Sandwich. You're like, oh no.
They've got a new sandwich at Subway. It's fantastic. Oh God, what's going on around here?
Mon Mothma comes out. And she says, what are you doing? They're all fighting. Oh, everyone's shooting you. Oh, many Bothans are dying.
Keith Campbell asks, why wasn't Chewie in that Battlefront trailer? Give us Chewie. He's got to be coming.
No, he's in there.
I hope he just runs out and rips a guy's arm off and throws it.
Everything is just arm.
Like, just throws it.
There's your M rating. I'm excited about this game.
I want Pip Fortuna because I love that guy.
I feel like playable R2 would be really interesting because he has so many weird things he can do.
Only in the dumb prequels can you do weird things, though.
Yeah.
He's got those jets.
Yeah. I love that he just looks real lazy in the original trilogy after all the stuff that happens in the prequels.
He throws that lightsaber to Luke.
So everybody always says Boba Fett doesn't do anything in Jedi and he's a bumbling idiot. I was watching Jedi and I caught something I never caught before, which is probably really dumb of me. he totally is the first one to realize that something shady is going on, because R2 goes by like real fast right before everything gets real, and Boba Fett just looks over, and that's why he goes up topside to die.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or, you know, yeah, he doesn't really die, perceptive. But to go in that big desert butt.
Yeah, I want to be able to call in an Ewok strike.
Of that's like, oh, yeah,
15 of them just like swarm one guy. Yeah, you just hear and they're like, wah! They swing in from the sides. And
I'm so excited because it looks like I've been complaining that Battlefront looks like too much about a bunch of human beings with guns and military stuff, which is fun. Yeah. It's cool, but we got a lot of video games with that. Finally, we're getting some weird aliens with dumb heads.
I think,
and if that's just cosmetic, that's cool. If we get some more weird heroes, I'm on board. If we get some aliens, yeah. I'm 100%.
I think the first few weeks, or probably even months, are there to satiate the sort of first-person shooter crowd that gets together every fall and shoots each other. But
and then when those dudes leave the room, it gets weird.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, there's people like Max and I who are like, oh, look at that. Yeah.
Turn into Marty.
Yeah.
Will you join our caravan of courage as we wage war on the planet of the forest moon of Endor? All right, rapid fire real quick.
That's right. What do we got here today? I went in the podcast.
We already
Beyond
did one
Facebook
from Nick
group,
Spaulding.
And I asked you some questions. You can go in that group and join me in my hunt for questions every single week right here on Podcast Beyond. Sebastian Thrower says, favorite horror games? Halloween is approaching fast, and this question will be obsolete in a few days. Not true. Horror games are actually released all year round.
Only play them in October. Yep.
I do love Halloween time because it gives me a chance to watch tons. I've seen so many. Every time I have 90 minutes, I watch a horror movie. Just anytime there's even a window open, I watch horror movies. But horror games, very different. What about you guys? So I know, Max, you're not super into horror games,
right? I don't really like horror games because
you
don't
like being afraid.
You, sad baby,
should sit down and play Until Dawn.
Oh, I really
you
want
some
to.
Drinks and
Until,
sit down and play.
Until Dawn is like stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing is horror games frequently really, really commit to the serious stuff, and we get some stuff that kind of you can't really manufacture camp or kitsch really easily. Mm-hmm. You get stuff like Jill Sandwich, but we didn't realize that was funny until 10 years after Resident Evil was out, whatever. Yeah. Until Dawn, I really want to play. I think
that's
a lot of fun.
That's a super fun game. And I feel bad that we didn't talk about it enough because I think I was the only one who played a ton of it on the show. But that's a really great game. The Resident Evil 1 remake for GameCube.
Yeah,
that stands up there. Silent Hill
Lisa
2.
Lisa Trevor, man.
Yeah,
one of the creepiest. Weirdest characters.
You hear her before you see her.
Oh, like and she's like just this portion. Ghost daughter with like chains, and she's like, she's dragging. Oh God, I hate that stuff. You fight her in that gross basement.
Yeah,
I get very uneasy basement. Thinking about certain sections of those games. Yeah. Same with. Did you guys play Evil Within?
Yeah,
there was a lot of. Now it was kind of all over the place. There was a lot of stuff in there that was really, really smart and really cool.
Yeah.
The parts where it did its best to kind of ape a very much more violent version of Resident Evil 4, I was into. The story was a disaster. It ended, and I was like, what happened? In that house, but there's some cool stuff.
Yeah, I like Silent Hill 2. I like Silent Hill 4, The Room, for its ideas.
Right.
I think PT is probably the best horror thing to come out in the last since Amnesia. But we're never gonna get more of Silent Hills.
Yeah, too bad you can't download it if you haven't downloaded it already.
Also, one of the PS4s in our office that had it on it died, and so that's one fewer copy of PT we have
in the world.
Yeah,
that sucks.
Every time a PS4 dies,
if you walk into the door where the game library is repeatedly, and keep going through there, eventually that PS4 will reappear above you. That balcony,
and it's gonna be scary, and it's gonna bleed all over me.
Yeah, and then you gotta go flush a Vita down the sink. Yeah.
Jose Jimenez says, how many pizzas can you down during a press conference? This is tough.
We've had, we used to do a lot of covering like the VGAs or things like that. We would have a whole bunch of pizzas in the office, even if it was just me, Greg, and Colin or whatever, and there was never a single slice left. We were all disgusting.
Yep.
This press conference was at 9 in the morning, so we had zero pizzas.
Yeah, this one's early. That's true. But we've had big groups here and those things we're like are 4 pizzas enough, and nope, they're never enough.
Yeah, IGN's one of those places where like when you see massive pizza orders and you're like oh, is that 4? IGN's one of those places.
It's us. We actually almost did a video in the break room once where we got so many pizzas that we had something like 60 pizza boxes in there.
It was during all hands or something.
They ordered pizza for the entire company, and I wanted to do a video where we ran full speed into it, but we didn't figure out a way to shoot it without somebody getting very hurt. Timothy Ralph Weisenhunt says, can Julian give us a headline in French?
Oh, for those of you just tuning in to my prolific career in talking into things, my legal name is Julien because I was born in France.
Because you actually resemble a Julien knife cut, which is a technique where you take something and you make it very thin and very long and skinny.
And real wussy.
And you're a carrot.
A lot of people don't like it.
You're a real celery boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I took a couple years of high school French. I can mess this up real bad.
Okay. How about new Star Wars game coming soon?
Nouveau Guerre d'Etoile Vidéo Jeu
Star Wars.
On the route? I don't know.
Star Wars.
No, that's how you say it. Guerre d'Etoile.
Guerre d'Etoile?
Yeah, it means that's the War of the Stars. I
thought he said Guerre d'Etoile.
Yeah. So we're going to get a bunch of people riding. I got one for you. It's Regarde un hamburger de gouton noir, which is
look at this
disgusting black hamburger.
That's right. Is that what you're calling me that these days?
Totally messed up
call
the
me
syntax.
A black hamburger? Is that where we're at?
Mm-hmm.
Call me a black hamburger on the show?
Real weird salty beast that looks
kick you right in the black
Angus.
Shut up.
So that's a podcast beyond. We got a note from Jared.
Yes.
This is really exciting. Guys, oh my God, Fallout 4 comes out in like 2 weeks.
Real soon.
That's really exciting.
What the hell?
Right? Okay, we're going to have a lot to talk about there. So from Jared, next week IGN launches The Vault, our new weekly Fallout 4 show. Join our intrepid band.
Oh, can I read this in his voice?
Do it.
Next week, IGN launches The Vault, our new weekly Fallout 4 show. Join our intrepid band of post-apocalyptic survivors as we explore the ruins of Boston and the mysteries of life after eradication. Watch the first episode next Wednesday on IGN. If you've got a topic you'd like us to address, tweet at @vault_IGN. That's @vault_IGN. And let us know what you'd like to talk about.
Oh, boy.
I feel like people are going to think you're making fun of Jared. But
no, that's his voice. He's been on the show.
Yeah.
A lot of people should understand that when you make fun of something, it's because you love it.
Yes.
Unless you hate it.
Unless you're a bully in that case, don't do that.
Brian and I are doing Up at Noon every week. You haven't been tuning in. It's live at noon Pacific time on Thursdays. Yep. We have a lot of fun doing it. Sometimes it's exciting, and Adam Sessler joins us to talk about pornograph magazines in the woods.
That's right.
Other times, something doesn't work, and we panic.
Mm-hmm.
This week we've got
Zach a panic attack.
Yeah, he gets real huffy. We've got a new segment that I've prepared. It's called Cram Session. It's a little old video bit where I'm recommending some stuff that might be of interest to people.
A whole hall of study.
It's a very studious sort of domicile for your brain to go into. So maybe tune in and check that out. And of course, if you miss it live, we'll be putting up recorded versions of all that.
Yeah.
Marty, what do you got working on?
Nothing.
Check
out Podcast Unlocked. That's the other podcast I'm on. Check out Overclock. That's the other podcast I'm on. I'm on a lot of podcasts.
Is that why your voice is like that? Because you do too many podcasts?
No, it's because also I think the last time I wore this cardigan, I was around a dog, and so my eyes have been itching all day.
Oh,
and I've been sneezing a little bit.
Right.
So that's not great.
Huh.
Around a dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I actually put that cardigan on a dog when nobody was...
That's terrible.
Oh, no. Marty turned into a dog. He's become the one thing he hates. Brian, what do you have to tell us about?
Max and I just survived the 200th episode of The Comedy Button. We've been doing that show for 4 years now. We did 200 episodes, so go listen to that. Same as usual, I have an album out called Misanthrope Album. It's an album called Misanthrope, but you can get it at misanthropealbum.com. It's totally free. If you like it, you can pay what you want or buy it on iTunes, whatever you want to do. And new music coming soon, hopefully.
Awesome.
Andy?
Shower with
Andy.
I do a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes. Like, honestly, I don't have a ton of stuff that's public facing coming soon, but keep an eye out. There's some cool stuff coming towards the end of the month, and Marty and Brian and I have a thing coming outside of IGN soon. And
our new son.
Yeah, the three of us are moving to Vermont.
David Winkleton.
Real quick, what are you guys being for Halloween?
Young Steven Spielberg.
Marty?
I'm going to Portland with my friend. I haven't got a costume yet, but...
you're going to be a guy who lives in Portland? Yeah, you got the costume on already.
I'm not
going to...
Brian, what are you being?
I'm doing a B-boy Chewbacca.
At
the request of Max.
Yeah.
You'll probably get to see us in costume on Up at Noon this week, right?
My jacket isn't ready from the tailors, but, you know, I have a different jacket. I'll give it my best shot. I'm being Han Solo.
You brought a Han Solo vest to the tailors? What did you tell them to do?
I brought it as a jacket. I told them to take it in on the sides because extra large in Singapore is apparently a real big boy.
You didn't ask them to put blaster fire in certain parts of it or anything like that?
No.
That cool, those vape pens that he carries in this episode 7 trailer. You seen those?
Does he have vape pens?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, man.
He's got little vape cartridges.
Smelled like Fruit Loops as it walked
by. Making them like stamp little like burn marks in it.
Put a claw mark from the bear on there.
Oh, Chewie's got those darn eye boogers again. The vet gave me these little wipes, but he hates it. He nips at my fingers. It's real bad.
That's right.
You got to give him treats while you wipe him down.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. This is Podcast Beyond. We'll be back next week with more fun stories about PlayStation?
Probably.
Beyond.
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 That you were doing so well.
Here's a quick question for you. how did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.